Attention, South Dakota residents. Everything is fine. Everything is beautiful. Go back to your homes. Go back to your jobs. Trust in the authority.
Work. Eat. Stay asleep. Work. Eat. Stay asleep. Work. Eat. Stay asleep. Work. Stay asleep.
Keeping you docile and distracted during times of uncertainty. This is the South Dakota Department of Propaganda Podcast.
Secretary of State Money Johnson, who is facing backlash from anti-abortion groups after labeling their recent fund operation a scam. She warned that these groups were making calls to people who had signed a petition to place an abortion rights measure on the ballot, claiming to be from her office.
Johnson called these calls an attempt to pressure voters into retracting their signatures from the petition. Allegedly, this phone operation was part of a coordinated effort to gather information for legal challenge to the petition. Johnson viewed these actions as eroding public trust in the election process and asked Attorney General Marty Jackley to investigate.
Interestingly, Jackley said no laws were broken. He clarified that callers did not impersonate anyone or claim to work for the Secretary of State. According to him, the callers identified themselves as volunteers for a group that had obtained information about petition signers from Johnson's office.
This situation has outraged State Representative John Hansen, who was involved in the phone operation. He believes that by labeling the operation as a scam, Johnson has done significant and irreversible damage to the pro-life movement in South Dakota.
The political implications are being watched closely as well. Lisa Hager, associate professor of political science at South Dakota State University, suggests Johnson's stance could impact her political future, especially in relation to the pro-life movement support.
The measure on the ballot would amend the state constitution to include abortion rights. However, Life Defense Fund, a committee organized to defeat this ballot measure, plans on challenging the validity of petition signatures.
Hansen and his Life Defense Fund co-chair have announced they will file a challenge during the 30-day window provided for opponents to challenge the petition's validity.
As it stands, abortions are currently banned in South Dakota, except to preserve the life of the pregnant female. If approved by voters, this ballot measure would legalize abortions in the first trimester of pregnancy.
South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem released her second book, No Going Back: The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. And physical copies are not readily available in the state's largest city, Sioux Falls. However, the book can be ordered online from retailers like Target and Walmart.
This memoir, unlike her first, focuses more on national and local politics and details her time as the state's first female governor. But it is not without its controversies. For instance, Noem included a passage about shooting her 14-month-old hunting dog, Cricket, which caused an uproar. Additionally, at least two corrections were needed due to false statements within the book.
The book can be found online and in store at Barnes & Noble. But for locally owned bookstores in Sioux Falls, it's a mixed bag. Some stores won't sell it because of its inaccuracies, while others simply don't carry it because their audience does not align with Noem's ideals.
Interestingly, Crossroads Book and Music, a Christian storefront, carried Noem's first book and may have physical copies of this one at some point. Sixland Libraries have ordered 6 physical copies and currently have the audiobook available.
Noem's memoir was released on May 7th, but was met with controversy over a passage about Noem shooting her dog and a goat 20 years ago. There were also reported false statements about Noem meeting North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un and about Senator Mike Rounds calling for Donald Trump to drop out of the presidential election in 2016.
Ghostwriter Joshua Lizik shed some light on the ghostwriting process and why there could be errors or invalid information in the book. According to Lizik, public figures generally have limited time to meet with their ghostwriters, which could lead to inaccuracies.
Lizik also highlighted that memoirs of public figures are not necessarily meant to be accurate, but to create rapport with the general public. In Noem's case, her ghostwriter likely had a few hours with her, which might explain the inaccuracies and unexpected stories.
In terms of the availability of physical copies of the book, Lizik speculated that bookstores and distributors might be waiting for reprinted books from the publisher or simply observing how the narrative around the memoir develops.
Overall, while this book offers insights into Noone's political career and personal life, it has certainly caused a stir due to questionable accuracy and limited availability in certain areas.
Governor Kristi Noem's recently released memoir, No Going Back: The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward, made it to number 9 on the New York Times bestsellers list, but not without controversy. It was labeled with the Times Dagger of Death symbol, which identifies books with sales figures that include bulk orders, often casting doubt on the legitimacy of its bestseller status.
The book, released on May 7th, was surrounded by several disputes, including a passage describing Noem shooting her hunting dog and a goat, as well as two corrections needed for false statements. It was on the bestseller list for roughly a week before disappearing, and it's unclear why.
Now, appearing on the bestsellers list can significantly boost a book's visibility and sales, often solidifying an author's reputation in the literary and political worlds. Joshua Lissick, a renowned ghostwriter, states that this dagger symbol can raise suspicions about whether these are real book sales or rather bulk orders placed by the author's own organizations, which is seen as a reputation stain in the publishing industry.
Noem's first book didn't face this type of controversy, but the focus of this latest publication has been overshadowed by inaccuracies and false claims. These issues have already led to the cancellation of some national interviews and have prompted the publisher to make corrections and reissue the book in print.
Associate Professor Michael Card suggests that while selling books in bulk is common, especially for political books that might not otherwise sell well, Noem could have handled the inaccuracies differently. Denying these mistakes, he said, just makes it seem worse. It's unclear whether these controversies over Noem's memoir will have a lasting impact.
South Dakota is currently the only state in the United States with felony-level ingestion, and most of the 241 inmates jailed for this crime are serving maximum time.
The state is considering spending hundreds of millions on two new prisons due to overcrowding, which is hindering drug counseling and treatment.
With each inmate costing around $30,000 a year, these 241 inmates alone are costing the state about $7.2 million annually.
Efforts to change the ingestion law have stalled. Secretary of Corrections Kelly Wasco suggests that South Dakota should learn from North Dakota, which has fewer inmates due to its robust probation and pre-sentencing programs.
South Dakota's congressional delegation has shared their views on Governor Kristi Noem's banishment from most of the state's Native American reservations. Senator John Thune emphasized that dialogue with tribal leadership is crucial.
Senator Mike Rounds agreed, calling for mutual respect and recognizing good intentions from the tribal leadership. He hopes the respect will be regained at the state level.
Meanwhile, Representative Dusty Johnson, who has connections on both sides, reminded everyone that cooperation is key to resolving conflicts.
Governor Noem has previously mentioned that she continues to reach out to the tribes. 8 of 9 tribes in South Dakota, however, have banned her.
The North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC, has warned that the upcoming summer could lead to a shortage of power generation in some regions due to predicted extreme heat. However, the report also paints a more optimistic picture than last year's, mainly because of the surge in solar power development.
The United States now has enough energy supply to handle peak demand, thanks largely to the addition of 25 gigawatts of new solar power. This capacity, roughly equivalent to the maximum output of 25 large power plants, has lowered the risk of power shortfalls in areas previously identified as having an elevated risk.
Solar power's influence is only going to grow. At the end of this summer, solar is expected to make up 10% of the overall national electric generation capacity. The U.S. has hit a milestone with 5 million total solar installations, most of them residential, and is on track to reach 10 million within 6 years.
It's not just solar, battery storage is also rapidly expanding, with over 14 gigawatts expected to be added this year. These batteries complement solar generation by storing excess energy for use when needed, such as during peak demand periods.
But there are also challenges associated with this changing power mix. While certain regions have improved summer electric reliability outlook, others are seeing growing risks during extreme weather. Shortages could occur when demand is high and solar, wind, or hydro output are low.
This concern applies especially to parts of the Midwest and South in the grid area managed by the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, New England, Texas, much of the Southwest, and California. But grid operators are becoming more skilled at planning and managing grids with large quantities of intermittent resources.
While historically most of the country hit their highest demand for electricity in the summer, some areas are seeing increasing demand in winter due to a combination of factors including more extreme cold weather events.
To finish off, Christy Walsh from the Natural Resources Defense Council's Sustainable FERC project emphasized how central climate change is to these pressures on the electric grid. She stressed the need for a grid that can withstand extreme weather and efficiently manage resources during times of stress.
The United States as a collective has been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
According to the American Psychiatric Association, this is the first time an entire nation has been diagnosed with a mental health disorder. The APA states that recent and recurring events have caused significant anxiety, stress, and trauma for the average American citizen.
They've cited events like political changes, national disasters, and even plot twists in popular television shows. Dr. Ellen Nimeroff, lead psychiatrist on the study, believes every American is suffering from some form of trauma-related stress disorder.
The article mentions persistent warfare and the worry about tax dollar usage as contributing factors to national anxiety. The lack of funding for healthcare and education are particularly pointed out.
Also, constant mass shootings and corporate greed exacerbate this trauma. 74% of Americans reportedly feel unsafe in public places due to fears of random shootings.
A host of problems were listed as causing PTSD, from divorce of celebrities to dietary advice from AI. The nation has been advised to manage their stress through deep breathing exercises and humor.
However, many are skeptical that these measures will provide relief without a complete societal overhaul.
It's a heavy topic, but it's important to shed light on these issues affecting the mental health of our nation.
The Atlantic magazine: President Trump skipped a visit to a World War I memorial in France because he considered the cemetery for America's war dead to be filled with losers.
John Kelly confirmed that Trump described dead U.S. service members as losers and suckers.
He stood next to his former chief of staff at the grave of his son who died in Afghanistan and said, "What was in it for them?"
Trump has faced major criticism for not reaching out to the families of four U.S. soldiers. He has played golf at least four times since these young men were killed.
The president said that he knew what he signed up for. He couldn't remember my husband's name.
What happened to her husband? Where is he? He's gone. He knew.
The Trump Foundation admitted to misusing funds, including using money meant for veterans to bump up his presidential campaign.
The man of the operations that killed Osama bin Laden. You're not even going to give them credit for taking down bin Laden?
They took him down, but
he's a Navy SEAL.
Wouldn't it have been nice if we got Osama bin Laden a lot sooner than that? Wouldn't it have been nice?
He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
I figured there would be a chance that I would catch it. For instance, I met with Gulf Star families. They come within an inch of my face sometimes. They want to hug me and they want to kiss me.
President Trump announced a pair of secret meetings with Taliban negotiators at Camp David just days before the 18th anniversary of the September 11th attacks.
The South Dakota Highway Patrol has urged drivers to be safe during the holidays following 254 reported crashes, 77 injuries, and 2 fatalities during the 2023 Memorial Day weekend. Interestingly, this marks the highest number of crashes in the last 20 years.
To put that in perspective, there were only 177 total crashes in 2019. And according to the Department of Public Safety, the holiday with the most fatalities and injuries is usually during the July 4th weekend. In fact, in just 30 hours of 2007, there were 13 injury crashes and 25 injuries.
Unfortunately, when there is a fatal or injury crash, statistics show that the driver is likely under 25. Around 28% of all drinking drivers and fatalities and injuries, and about 39% of drivers involved in fatal or injury crashes were under 25 and speeding.
Speaking of speeding, it was the cause of death in 47 fatalities in 2022. Additionally, a total of 478 people died in crashes with an alcohol-impaired driver between 2013 to 2022.
As we head into the holiday season, let's remember to stay safe on the roads.
So the article centers around palliative care, a term many people aren't familiar with. It's not hospice care, as some might think.
Palliative care is more about providing relief from symptoms and stress associated with serious illnesses, such as cancer. It's about improving the quality of life for both the patient and their family.
The services are delivered by a specialized team of doctors, nurses, social workers, and chaplains. They focus on physical symptoms and also aim to address psychosocial, emotional, and spiritual stressors associated with the illness.
Sadly, despite being such a vital part of healthcare, palliative care isn't easily accessible to many South Dakota residents, particularly those in rural areas, and even where it is available, gaps remain.
The South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations is advocating for better access to palliative care. They're supporting the Federal Palliative Care and Hospice Education and Training Act. This bill is trying to overcome the current barriers limiting patients' access to palliative care.
The bill's goals focus on improved training and education around palliative care. It aims to increase resources but also help people understand why palliative care is so important.
Palliative care can be life-changing for those living with serious illness, and it's not just beneficial for the patients, but also for the healthcare system. It can reduce hospital stays and cut down costs.
It's crucial that we work towards making these services accessible to all. It's something that shouldn't just be limited to urban or hospital-based settings.
And in addition to access, we need laws that support the entire interdisciplinary team involved in delivering this care. We must ensure reimbursement for all involved.
All in all, improving access to palliative care could greatly enhance the lives of South Dakotans suffering from serious illnesses and could be a prudent investment for lawmakers concerned about healthcare costs.
That's it for today.